A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Reddit is often described as the front page of the internet, but that misses what makes it truly strange. It's more like the back alleys, the basements, the forgotten storage rooms where people gather around the weirdest possible shared interest. Daniel sent us a prompt that gets right at this. He writes, "Let me read this properly. Reddit is one of those almost mythological online spaces, a sprawling and loosely interconnected network of communities often dedicated to discussing wildly niche topics. It has a dark side, of course. The same anonymity that people love about it also allows people to be gratuitously mean to others on Reddit. But the sheer number of communities it creates is, I think, an example of what can be good about the internet. You might be the only person in your city who plays the hurdy-gurdy, but on the internet you can connect with a vast wave of humans in different parts of the world who might share your niche interests. But even on Reddit, there are communities that are more fringe than others. What are some of the most obscure and bafflingly niche subcultures and communities that have sprung up on and through Reddit over the years? So today, we're going spelunking into the deepest, weirdest corners of Reddit. Not the ones that make the news, but the ones that barely anyone knows exist."
And Daniel's hurdy-gurdy analogy is exactly right. That's the promise of the platform. But here's the thing I want to sit with before we dive into examples. The structural question. What's it about Reddit specifically that makes it such a fertile ground for this kind of weirdness? Because it's not just that the internet connects people. Forums have existed since the 80s. Usenet groups, IRC channels, PHBBB boards, none of them produced quite this density of bizarre specificity.
Friction, or the lack of it.
That's the big one. Creating a subreddit takes about 30 seconds and costs nothing. You click a button, type a name, and you exist. No hosting fees, no DNS configuration, no moderation tools to build from scratch. The platform handles everything. So the barrier between I wonder if anyone else collects vintage staplers and a community of 47 people who collect vintage staplers is essentially zero.
And that's before you get to the age of the thing. Reddit launched in 2005. We're sitting here in 2026. That's 21 years of accumulated weirdness. 21 years of someone, somewhere, at 3 in the morning, thinking, what if there was a place for photos of bread stapled to trees, and then just making it?
Right? And the discovery mechanics matter too. The upvote and downvote system means that within any given community, the stuff that resonates with that specific audience floats to the top. It's not a global popularity contest. A post with 12 upvotes in a community of 300 people can be the most important thing those 300 people see that day. Plus, you've got cross-posting, the random button, the subreddit of the day feature. There are pathways into the weirdness.
The random button. I forgot about the random button.
It's basically a portal gun for niche interests. Click it, and suddenly you're in a community dedicated to photos of bees wearing tiny top hats, and you stay. Not because you care about bees and top hats, but because the sheer commitment to the bit is mesmerizing.
Which brings us to the taxonomy Daniel's really asking for. We should map this out. Three categories, I think. The wholesome weird, the bafflingly specific, and the dark fringe. Same structural features produce all three. That's the tension.
Let's start with the wholesome weird. Because these are the ones that make you remember why the internet can be genuinely delightful. r/bread stapled to trees, founded in 2013. As of this year, roughly 150,000 subscribers. The premise is exactly what it sounds like. People staple bread to trees and post photos of it. That's it. That's the entire subreddit.
Hold on. 150,000 people.
150,000. And here's what makes it interesting from a community design perspective. They have strict rules. No memes, no reposts, no bread that isn't stapled to a tree. If you post a photo of bread nailed to a tree, it gets removed. Wrong fastener.
The fastener purity rule.
It sounds absurd, but it's the entire reason the community works. Without that enforcement, it'd have devolved into generic meme posting within 6 months. Instead, you get this, almost artistic commitment. People staging elaborate outdoor scenes, different types of bread, different species of trees. There's a seasonal rhythm to it. Autumn bread stapling hits different than spring bread stapling.
I'm trying to imagine the moderator who has to adjudicate whether a particular fastening implement qualifies as a staple.
That person is a hero of the internet, and they're not alone. r/RealBees fake top hats. About 50,000 subscribers. Photos of bees wearing tiny top hats. But the hats are photoshopped on. And the community has elaborate rules about distinguishing real hats from fake hats. The name itself is the rule. Real bees, fake top hats. If someone posts a photo of a fake bee with a real top hat, that's a violation.
The fact that this distinction has ever needed to be enforced is why I love the internet.
It's an absurdist game that everyone agrees to play. And that shared agreement, that collective commitment to a bit that makes no sense to outsiders, that's what binds these communities. It's not about the bread or the bees. It's about being part of something that couldn't exist anywhere else.
The hurdy-gurdy principle. Daniel's exactly right. You might be the only person in your city who finds this funny. But on Reddit, there are 50,000 other people who also find it funny. And now, you have a home.
Which brings us to the second category, the bafflingly specific. These aren't joke communities. They're built around hyper-narrow expertise and genuine observation. r/DesirePath, about 200,000 subscribers. People post photos of paths created by pedestrians walking across grass instead of using the designated sidewalks. These worn-down trails that cut across lawns and parks and campus quads, where the official path goes around the perimeter, but human behavior says no, straight line.
Desire paths are fascinating. They're a record of collective decision-making. Thousands of individual choices, each one saying the designer was wrong. This is the actual route.
And the community attracts urban planning enthusiasts, landscape architects, pedestrian behavior observers. The comments aren't just cool photo. They're analyzing traffic patterns, discussing the optimal width of a desire path relative to foot traffic volume, debating whether certain desire paths should be formalized into actual sidewalks or left as unofficial monuments to human stubbornness.
There's probably a doctoral thesis in r/desirepath comments.
Almost certainly. And then there's r/subreddit simulator, about 100,000 subscribers. It's an automated subreddit where every post and every comment is generated by a bot running a Markov chain trained on other subreddits. The bots have usernames that tell you which subreddit they're in. So you get a bot trained on r/relationships, posting something that sounds almost like a relationship problem, and a bot trained on r/legal advice, responding with something that sounds almost like legal counsel. And the result is this surrealist mirror held up to Reddit itself.
Wait, so nobody human posts there at all?
Humans can't post. The subreddit is entirely bot-generated. It's been running for years. The BBC actually highlighted it as a prime example of Reddit's self-referential weirdness. It's a community about the platform that exists only because the platform exists, populated by algorithms trained on the platform's own output. It's like Reddit's subconscious.
I need to sit with that. A community with 100,000 human subscribers who only watch bots talk to each other.
And it's funny. The bots produce these almost coherent fragments that capture the rhythm and vocabulary of each source subreddit without actually saying anything. It's the platonic ideal of a niche Reddit community. Utterly pointless, completely mesmerizing, and impossible to explain to someone who doesn't already understand Reddit.
How do people even find these places?
That's a structural question worth unpacking. The discovery pathways are part of what makes the ecosystem work. You've got the recommendation algorithm, which surfaces communities based on your browsing history. Cross-posting, where someone in a larger subreddit shares a post from a tiny one and suddenly 10,000 people click through. The random button, which I mentioned. And subreddit of the day, which intentionally highlights obscure communities. The BBC article on strange Reddit communities notes that many of these subreddits have fewer than 10,000 subscribers and rely on a single viral post to grow. One bread stapling photo hits the front page, and suddenly 100,000 people know bread stapling exists.
And the rules keep them from collapsing under that growth.
This is the first structural lesson. Specificity requires enforcement. r/bread stapled to trees survived going from 500 subscribers to 150,000 because the moderation didn't relax. If anything, it got stricter. The rules are what maintain the identity. Without them, the community gets diluted by people who saw one post, thought it was funny, and want to participate without understanding what makes it work.
The eternal tension of every online space, growth versus coherence.
And it connects to something I've noticed across years of watching these communities. The weirdest subreddits often have the strictest moderation. The more niche the interest, the more protective the community is about maintaining what makes it niche. They'd rather stay small and weird than get big and generic. That's not a bug. It's the whole point.
So far, we've got bread, bees, footpaths, and bots talking to each other. This is the wholesome side of the taxonomy. But Daniel's prompt also mentioned the dark side. The anonymity that lets you find your hurdy-gurdy people also lets people be gratuitously mean.
And this is where the same structural features we've been celebrating turn into something else entirely. The frictionless creation, the anonymity, the algorithm that surfaces whatever resonates within a community. All of it works just as well for toxicity as it does for bread stapling.
Let's go there.
The classic case study is r/incels. Banned in 2017, it started as a support group. Involuntarily celibate people, mostly men, sharing their experiences and trying to help each other. That was the stated purpose. And for a while, that's what it was. But the same dynamics that make r/breadstapledtotrees work, anonymity, shared experience, lack of outside scrutiny, they created a feedback loop. The most resonant posts weren't the supportive ones. They were the ones that externalized the problem. Blaming women, blaming society, the upvote system amplified the grievance.
And the moderation either couldn't or wouldn't stop it.
In some cases, the moderators were part of the radicalization. The Vice article on bizarre Reddit communities documents how r/incels evolved from a support group into a misogynistic hate group. The same platform mechanics that let 50,000 people bond over fake bee hats let a community curdle into something that produced real-world harm. The subreddit was linked to multiple acts of violence before Reddit finally banned it.
The life cycle is what's striking. It didn't start toxic. It became toxic. The structure enabled the drift.
And that's the uncomfortable truth. You can't design a platform that enables r/breadstapledtotrees without also enabling r/incels. The features are identical. The variable is moderation, community norms, and whether the people with power in the community enforce guardrails or participate in the slide.
r/thedonald is the other canonical example.
Quarantined in 2019, banned in 2020, started as a Trump support subreddit, became a vector for radicalization, harassment campaigns, and eventually content that violated Reddit's policies on inciting violence. What's instructive is the quarantine system itself. Reddit didn't ban it outright at first. They put it behind a warning screen. Users had to opt in. It couldn't appear in search results or on r/all. It couldn't generate ad revenue.
A middle ground between free speech absolutism and outright censorship.
That was the idea. In practice, critics argue quarantine just pushes toxic communities further underground. It doesn't solve the problem, it displaces it. And that's exactly what happened. After r/thedonald was banned, the community migrated. First, to a standalone site called thedonald.win, which was later shut down after the January 6th Capitol riot. Then, to more obscure platforms. Discord servers, Telegram channels, private subreddits that are harder to find and harder to monitor.
So the toxicity didn't disappear. It just became less visible.
And in some ways, more dangerous. When these communities were on Reddit, they were at least observable. Researchers could study them. Journalists could document them. Platform moderators could intervene. Once they moved to encrypted messaging apps and private forums, they're black boxes. The Vice article specifically notes this migration pattern. The problem hasn't been solved, it's been fragmented.
Which creates a weird dynamic where the platform looks cleaner, but the underlying problem might actually be worse.
That's the knock-on effect nobody wants to talk about. Reddit's ban of overtly toxic communities was necessary. I'm not arguing against it. But pretending it solved the problem is dishonest. The same people are still out there. They're just harder to see now.
So, what's the counterexample? The community that stayed healthy despite growth?
r/askhistorians. It's frequently cited as one of the best moderated communities on the entire platform. Comment removal rates exceed 90% in some threads. 90%. Most of what gets posted never sees the light of day.
That sounds draconian.
It's draconian, and it's why the community works. If you post an answer that isn't sourced, it gets removed. If you post a joke, it gets removed. If you post speculation, it gets removed. What remains is rigorously researched, citation-backed historical analysis written by actual historians. The community has over 1 million subscribers and the quality hasn't declined. The strictness is the feature.
So the correlation is strong. Strict rules, healthy community. Loose rules drift toward toxicity or genericism.
It's not universal. There are plenty of loosely moderated communities that are perfectly fine. But when you look at the communities that maintain a strong identity over time, whether it's bread stapling or historical analysis, the common thread is active, consistent moderation that enforces clear standards.
Daniel's prompt mentioned the hurdy-gurdy player finding their people. That's the promise. But the hurdy-gurdy community only stays worth finding if someone is keeping the trolls out and making sure the conversation is actually about hurdy-gurdies.
And that work is mostly invisible and mostly unpaid, which brings us to something that's been hanging over Reddit for the last few years. The 2023 API changes. Reddit started charging for API access, which killed third-party apps like Apollo. Those apps were widely used by moderators because they provided better moderation tools than the official Reddit app. The Daily Dot noted that many niche subreddits saw a decline in moderator activity after the API changes.
The platform made a business decision that directly undermined the people who keep the platform functional.
Yes, and for niche communities in particular, losing one active moderator can be fatal. These aren't communities with deep moderation benches. Sometimes it's one or two people who've been curating the space for years. If they leave because their tools stop working, the community either degrades or dies.
The irony being that Reddit's value as a company is almost entirely built on these niche communities existing and being healthy.
The content, the engagement, the advertising inventory, all of it comes from people posting bread stapled to trees and debating desire paths and writing 5,000-word answers about medieval farming practices. Reddit doesn't create content. The communities do. And the API changes made it harder for the people who maintain those communities to do their work.
What do we do with all of this? Daniel's asking about the obscure communities, but the answer comes with this whole apparatus of structural analysis attached.
I think the practical takeaway for anyone listening is twofold. First, if you want to find genuine connection around a niche interest, look for the subreddits with strict rules and active moderation, not the ones with millions of subscribers and no oversight. The 90% comment removal rate on r/askhistorians isn't a bug. It's a signal that someone cares enough to maintain quality.
The rules are the welcome mat. If there are no rules, nobody's home.
Second, recognize the life cycle. Communities change as they grow. The subreddit you joined at 10,000 subscribers will be different at 100,000. That's not necessarily bad, but it requires active management. If the moderation doesn't scale with the community, something else fills the vacuum. Usually, the loudest voices.
The loudest voices are rarely the best ones.
The broader implication, and this is what I keep coming back to, is that Reddit's niche communities are a microcosm of the internet's entire promise and its entire failure. The ability to find your people, no matter how obscure your interest, is wonderful. It's one of the best things the internet has ever done. But the same architecture that enables that connection also enables the worst of human behavior. Understanding the trade-off is essential for anyone building or participating in online communities.
The BBC article concluded something similar. The health of these communities ultimately depends on the willingness of moderators to enforce rules consistently. It's not about the technology. It's about the human effort.
That human effort is fragile. It depends on tools, on platform support, on the unpaid labor of people who care enough to keep the bread stapling community pure. When the platform makes that labor harder, the weirdness suffers. The wholesome weird and the dark weird both.
Which brings us to the question that's hanging over all of this. What happens to these communities as Reddit itself changes? The API changes, the IPO pressure, the rise of AI-generated content flooding every platform. Can the niche community survive?
I'm uncertain about this. The API changes already did measurable damage to moderator capacity. AI-generated content is a newer threat. If subreddits get flooded with plausible-sounding bot posts, the moderation burden increases exponentially. And these are volunteer moderators. They have limits.
The r/subreddit simulator bots were charming when they were contained in their own space. If they're everywhere, it's less charming.
The line between a delightful meta-commentary on Reddit and a platform degradation problem is just deployment. One is a curated art project, the other is spam.
I want to steelman the counter-argument here. Someone could reasonably say we've been overly rosy about the niche communities and overly harsh about the platform's interventions. Reddit banned r/incels and r/theDonald because those communities were causing real harm. The quarantine system was an attempt at a middle ground, and the API changes were a business necessity for a company that had never turned a profit. The weird niche communities are collateral damage in a necessary cleanup.
That's fair. The bans were justified. I'm not arguing against them. And Reddit does need to be a sustainable business. The counter-argument concedes those points and still says the platform's treatment of moderators, the people who actually maintain the communities that give Reddit its value, has been short-sighted. You can ban toxic communities and support the healthy ones. Those aren't opposing goals. The API changes treated all third-party developers the same, regardless of whether they were building moderation tools or just building a better reading experience. That's the part I think was a mistake.
The weirdest subreddits are a testament to human creativity and the desire for connection. They're also a warning about what happens when that desire goes unmoderated. The internet giveth, and the internet taketh away.
The future of these communities depends on whether the platform remembers that its product isn't the app or the algorithm. It's the people who staple bread to trees and the people who remove the posts where someone used a nail.
If you've got a weird prompt you want us to explore, send it in. We read everyone, sometimes while stapling bread to trees.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.